Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, it's Holy Week.
Woohoo! Yeah.
As Sophie kept saying, where did this Lent go?
Where on earth did it go?
It seems like it goes faster every year, maybe because I'm getting older. And each Lent is shorter in proportion to the entirety of my life.
Perhaps.
Yes, just like the years go faster. So we're consumed with preparations for Easter, preparations for house guest, preparations for confirmation. We're preparing a lot.
Yeah, lots of preparation.
So this week, we were supposed to go camping with the girls' troop, Troop 13. We were supposed to go down to Cape Cod to this camp that was down there and do like a service weekend where, you know, it's the camp where they go to on their summer camp. And it was Bella and Sophie and the handful of other girls that make up the troop. There's only six of them now. And we did all the food shopping and stuff. And then was it Friday that?
Friday morning.
Sophie
woke up Friday morning and could barely talk.
So this had been going through the house, as I'm sure we've mentioned before, and you're no doubt undoubtedly heard me hacking in previous episodes. I tried to cut most of it out, but I'm sure I didn't get all of it. A spring cold has been going through the family.
I've done multiple COVID tests, and it just comes up negative every time.
Cold.
It's a cold.
Yeah. So. Ben, it keeps ravaging Ben. It comes and goes in him.
The poor kid.
It's been like 2 weeks that he's been sick.
Yeah.
But, and Sophie almost never gets sick. Like, she's the one, like, who's least likely to get a cold or flu or bug or of any kind. So when she gets sick, it's a good one. So I mentioned to the scoutmaster that Sophie wouldn't be going, and then the scoutmaster said, oh, then it's only Bella and her daughter. I'm like, I don't want to drive all the way to Cape Cod and then drive all the way back. It's an hour and a half each way Friday night and then go back and do it again Sunday morning for these, for two girls to go down. Like, it didn't make any sense. And I said that to the.
And Bella wasn't especially excited about going
without Sophie. Right, because there's a boy troop going, and the other girl knows the boys and would probably be hanging around with them, and she's younger than Bella, and Bella would end up being alone, especially since I wasn't going to be there because I had to record podcasts yesterday. So we decided, I feel so bad because this is the second camping trip in a row that we've canceled for them, the one in January and then this one. I just, it makes me feel sad for the girls because they just can't seem to get a camping trip. So, and that's the fun stuff, is the camping. That's the fun stuff of scouting.
Yep, it's...
It's sad.
Fate has conspired against them.
Yep. So, instead, we had a beautiful weekend at home. The weather was awesome. And they got to run around and help you with some cleaning and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Sophie ended up sleeping, like, 4 hours in the middle of the day on Saturday. So, it was a very good thing that she didn't go. She really was wiped out.
Yeah. Although she woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't get back to sleep because she'd slept too much.
Yeah. Oh, it's
so
hard.
Poor thing. So,
I got some work done on the house, little bit of cleaning, I emptied a few more boxes and.
Slowly but surely.
There's a lot to do, especially if we're going to have.
Family over
for Bella at Bella's confirmation. I have a feeling that the confirmation cleanup is going to be shoving boxes into bedrooms and shutting the door and hoping that nobody wants to go in there.
Right.
I would love to think that everything is going to be in good order, but it's probably not.
Shoving things into the shed.
Yeah.
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 Well, I mean, still get the holes in the walls because the soffits haven't been put up because I can't get the contractor to come back. But that's a whole nother story.
So it's an adventure.
It's an adventure.
Never. What? Someday we're going to look around at our house and realize that everything is actually put back together again.
That will be an interesting day. I wonder what year that will be.
Right?
Yeah. I remember. It's been so long. Anyway, the other thing that I was doing this week is notice. So 11-year-old boys, when they get bored, I think they're the people that the phrase the idle hands are a devil's playground that we're made for.
Probably, yeah.
Because poor Anthony just gets bored. He finishes his schoolwork. He's got all his screen time for playing on the iPad. He's listened to his book forever, and he's just bored, and he wants something to do. And his brother and sister are doing something else, and he's kind of stuck. And he gets into trouble. So rather than letting him get himself into trouble with his curiosity. He's a very curious boy. He's very interested in how things work and pulling things apart, which drives me a little crazy sometimes. I said, okay, buddy, here, come here. Here's my iPad. This is my work iPad. Here's an app called Swift Playgrounds. This will teach you how to program apps. And that's what it is. So it's an app made by Apple, and it's a teaching app that teaches you how to program. And it's a really good app. And you could use this to build actual apps to put on your iPhone. I mean, it's a real, you know, if you went through the whole thing, you'll be able to load an app onto the App Store. I mean, it's that comprehensive. And so I said, here, use it. Use it as long as you want. As long as you're not getting into the games or anything else that's on the iPad, but as long as you're using the playgrounds and you're learning programming, I'm happy for you to do that as long as you want, as long as you have, you know, time for. And he was really excited by it, and he was really getting into it. I really wanted to encourage that, because learning how to program, even if you don't become a programmer, but knowing, it's like knowing how your car works. If you understand how your car works, you're going to be much more successful as a car owner. If you understand what a carburetor does, although most cars don't have carburetors anymore. Fuel injection and, you know, all the different bits and pieces. If you don't understand how computers work, how the programming works, you're going to be much more successful in general in a computerized technological society. So anyway, which is to say, if you have an iPad and you have a bored, you know, 11 or 12 year old boy or girl, you know, somewhere around that age, I'd say 11, maybe even 10 if they're, you know, somewhat advanced, all the way up. Give them the Swift Playgrounds is free. Just download it off the App Store and let them have at it and see how it goes. You might be surprised at what results. So anyway, that was my revelation for the week. So and he seems to be having fun.
Yeah, so
that's good.
Yeah, I mean, a few times recently, I've actually seen him doing extra pages in math because he was bored.
So, right.
You know, when the kid opens up his math book and is like doing math problems just to kill time, then yeah.
Yeah. Poor kid. Yeah. The weather has finally turned, so they can go out. But the thing is, he doesn't have a bike, and that's a problem.
We need to get him a bike.
It's hard because but it turns out really the only place you get a bike is Target. Target doesn't have the biggest selection of bikes.
Try Walmart.
Or, yeah, we can try Walmart, too. But they're also not cheap, as we found with Ben's bike. And then, yeah, don't give me the topic of bikes. You can go listen to last year's podcast where we dealt with the broken pedal on Ben's brand new bike. Okay, but that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah. We just need to suck it up and go buy him a bike.
Right. We need to give him, you know, keep him busy. He needs to, 11-year-old boys need to be busy. So let's move on, talk about some food, because we did have some good food this week. You had the idea we had some pulled pork, leftover pulled pork in the freezer.
We had three different batches of leftover pulled pork that's been sitting in the freezer for forever. And I've been craving enchiladas, but we didn't have any chicken.
Leftover chicken.
And I had a brainstorm one day while poking around in the freezer, and I saw all the pulled pork, and I thought, I wonder how pulled pork enchiladas would be. So I did it. And it was not bad. I still prefer chicken enchiladas.
It was really good. I mean, I think you're underselling it. It was really good. Like, and you made it with the mole, right?
No.
What did you make for the sauce in it?
It was a red sauce. I mean, it was kind of my own hybrid. It's
a hybrid enchilada sauce.
Yeah, it's a red sauce, but it has a little bit of cocoa powder in it, so it kind of has that mole flavor, but it's not really a mole sauce. It's just like tomato sauce with chili powder. Like
when you say tomato sauce, not like ragu, don't put spaghetti sauce.
Like the stuff that's unflavored tomato sauce.
There's a can among the canned tomatoes that will say tomato sauce. And it just means it's cooked tomatoes as opposed to diced or crushed.
Yeah, it's more pureed than...
It's a pureed, but it's cooked. That's why it's a sauce.
Right.
Yep.
Well, anything that's canned is cooked.
Sure.
Okay, anyway, so I added lots of spices to it. First of all, I sauteed some onion and garlic, and then I threw in the tomato sauce. I threw in some chicken drippings that we had left over.
Yeah, we're always talking about that. Whenever you cook chicken, save the drippings.
And what else did I put? Chili powder, ancho chili powder, like several different kinds of chili powder, oregano.
Cumin.
Yeah, and then a little bit of cinnamon and like a tablespoon maybe of cocoa powder, which adds just a really nice depth of flavor.
Right. It doesn't taste chocolatey. It tastes deep and smoky.
Yeah. So it was good. The pulled pork all had different sauces on it. Like, I wasn't even sure what kind of sauce it had, like barbecue sauce or something on it. I just threw it in there anyway.
It works.
Yeah, it was tasty. I made two pans of enchiladas. We finished one pan of enchiladas at dinner, and then the next one
went the next day,
completely gone the next day.
Yes, it was there. I mean, frankly, if we weren't all a lot of people having colds, it would have been like a pan and a half the first meal.
Right. I mean, and this is a 13x9 pan, which holds a dozen enchiladas.
Right. Right. So that was basically two dozen enchiladas for the seven of us. Yeah, and it's really good. Most everyone likes it. So
two of my children don't eat enchiladas, and so they have like
mac tostadas and cheese
or quesadillas tostadas, or mac and cheese. Yeah. I think they had mac and cheese.
Right, because that's what they do.
Sigh. Although, you know, it's funny because I did not, as a child, like enchiladas. My mom made them all the time, and on enchilada nights, she would always make either tacos or tostadas or quesadillas for us. And she and my dad ate enchiladas until gradually, one by one, my siblings started to eat them. But I don't think I actually liked enchiladas until I was an adult. So, you know, there's hope.
Was your mom the sort that were like, eat this? It's like, would she lay down the law about eating stuff?
No.
I can't imagine your mom being like that.
My mom is not a lay down the law kind of person.
No.
She's very laid back.
Your mom is very laid back.
Yeah.
So another dish that was really good that we made this week is the spinach and beet greens.
That was tasty.
So one thing we've been doing is we've been trying to, you know, encouraging Ben to eat more. He needs vitamin D. So we've been encouraging him to eat iron.
And iron.
Yeah. To have some spinach salad. So we buy him. That's the kind of salad he'll eat.
It's the only kind of salad he'll eat is baby spinach.
Baby spinach with dried cranberries and Italian dressing. And which is great because those are both really good for you. But so we buy like a container of baby spinach, like the plastic container thing of baby spinach every week. And he doesn't necessarily get to eat it all every week. And we realized we're throwing it away. So decided.
I don't think we were.
Well, it was going bad. Let me put it that way. Right. Like it was going bad before he ate it all. So we decided, well, why don't we just like buy a new one every week? But on the day that we buy a new one, take the old one and just cook up the greens.
That was your brilliant idea.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you had put beets on the shopping list.
I love beets.
And they finally had some beets and they had them on sale. And these were a bunch of beets with the stalk of the greens on it still. And beet greens are good when cooked up. And so we just had a quick interruption, child coming to get a good night hug. So I was talking about the beet greens. So, you know, we cut off the greens as soon as you get them home from the market and you wash them up. And the best way is just cook them that day, like if you want to use them.
Yeah, you don't want to let them sit.
Beet greens, you know, beet greens, mustard greens, those will not last at all. So you cook them up with the spinach, the baby spinach.
Yeah, I just sauteed some onions and garlic and put some red pepper flakes in the pan and then just the greens just long enough to...
Just to wilt.
To wilt, yeah.
And my contribution was you said cider vinegar or lemon, and I said lemon.
We did lemon.
And I think that was the good choice.
It's also good with vinegar.
It would have been good with cider vinegar. Yeah,
greens with vinegar is good.
But it was really good. It was like, I mean, it was really flavorful and simple. Onion, garlic, lemon with the greens just cooked enough to wilt them.
Yeah.
It was Friday. That's what it was. And that's why we didn't put any bacon in it.
Right. Pepper flakes.
Oh, yes. Red pepper flakes.
I either red pepper flakes or if you want to get a little bit fancy, I really love Aleppo pepper. And I put that in it. I put Aleppo pepper in everything.
Oh, yeah.
And
if you can get your hands on Aleppo pepper, it's getting easier to find, especially if you go to like thespicehouse.com or one of the online spice vendors.
It's a little bit milder than just the regular red pepper flakes.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of a little bit more of a fruity flavor.
Yes, definitely.
That's
the thing. So Aleppo pepper is, it suggests, it's a Middle Eastern chili pepper. But it's used in a lot of Middle Eastern dishes, but it's not as hot. It's not a super hot pepper. It's a fruity kind of pepper thing.
It's so good. I put it in almost everything. I just like a pinch of Aleppo pepper and.
Yeah. It's like if you're making like an Italian dish that calls for red pepper flakes, give it a try, Aleppo pepper a try.
Sometimes I use both because I want some of the heat and the fruitiness.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just use Aleppo instead of red pepper flakes.
Yep. So give them both a try. The beet greens with spinach greens, and then, you know, get some Aleppo pepper. Give that a try too. All right. So
I also made rice pudding this week.
Oh, right. With all that leftover rice.
I had just been craving rice pudding. A friend of mine mentioned it. And I just decided I had to have some. I think the kids each tried a little bit.
Lucy had some.
Lucy had a little bit and Bella had a little bit, but mostly I ate the whole batch of it. I had a can of coconut milk. And so I did equal parts coconut milk and regular whole milk. And you just do a 1-to-1 ratio of milk to cooked rice, like already cooked leftover rice, not the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And then I added like a cinnamon stick and some cardamom, some lemon and orange zest, and some currants and golden raisins, and a little bit of vanilla. And then for sweetener, I added just not very much, just a little bit of brown sugar and maple syrup. It was so good.
I'm trying to speak now. What if you used evaporated milk instead of whole milk?
You could do that, I guess.
That would be really
like
yummy.
Evaporated milk or condensed milk.
Sweet and condensed milk. I always mix them up. I mean, I always forget which one is which, but I'm not much of a baker. But I would imagine that would be really good.
That probably would be. It might be, that's a little thick, so you might want to do kind of like I did with the coconut milk.
So
like
instead of coconut half whole milk, half sweet and condensed?
Yeah.
Although the coconut flavor would be good.
I really love the coconut flavor in it.
Yeah.
It's not strongly coconut, but it has a distinct note of coconut.
Mm. I only took one bite of the rice pudding, but it was good. Yeah. I've not been a rice pudding fan in the past, but I haven't had the right rice pudding, I guess. So I'd give that another try. Cool. So what do we got planned for Easter? We're planning to grill, weather permitting, a leg of lamb for the adults who will eat lamb, and steak for everyone else. what else? Then you're going to be baking your usual challah day bread.
Yeah, I'll probably bake a big cross-shaped loaf of challah. I will probably make like a sweet bread.
Hot cross buns.
Hot cross buns for Good Friday.
Yeah.
Always. And then, I don't know, I might make another dessert for Easter itself, but I haven't really decided yet. I'm still...
And we'll be obviously going over to my brother's to see the whole family on Easter afternoon, which would be nice. It'll be nice if your sister's up for going over, because I'm sure everyone will want to see her. They haven't seen... I don't think they saw her the last time she was here.
No, she didn't go visiting last time.
Yeah, because, you know, in the middle of COVID. So it's been a couple of years since she's seen anyone. So that would be nice. My dad asks for her and your parents every time he sees us.
Yeah.
Usually three or four times. Because he forgot. Yeah, and then I'm trying to think what else we should make. Eggplant, maybe? And potatoes, something?
Yeah, something like squash or potato.
And of course.
Green something or other. I don't know.
You bought 3 1.5 dozens of eggs today for dyeing.
I got a lot of eggs.
So 36? No, that would be 3 dozen. This is 48?
Yeah, so
You bought 4 dozen eggs, basically. So 18 plus 18 times 3. So 18 times 2 is 36 plus another 18. Is not 48, it is 54.
It's like 4.5 dozen.
Gosh, it's a lot of eggs.
It's a lot of eggs.
It's a lot of deviled eggs.
Well, see, the thing is, we love deviled eggs and they go fast.
Yeah.
And my sister's going to be here and she will eat them.
There'll be four of us eating them because Sophie loves them.
And then
too.
Bella also wants to have some eggs that aren't deviled.
Some just regular boiled eggs.
She just likes boiled eggs.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think Lucy likes the plain boiled eggs too.
Yeah.
They will not go to waste.
No, I'm certain of it. So in any case, so that's food. That's the food that will be coming up. We'll tell you all about that next time, because that'll be after Easter, the next episode. Let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. So I watched the Severance season one finale. Mm-hmm. Severance is the show I've been talking about. It's on Apple TV Plus. A lot of people have been talking about. It was a slow burn, this show. I wasn't sure about it when it started out, first couple episodes. It's all right. But I kept coming back because it was intriguing. And there's a mystery and the mystery was unfolding slowly. And there was more unfolding. And by the end of the season, I'm like on the edge of my seat and the drama and right to the very end. Like, it's like there's so much tension right to the very last second of that episode of the season finale. So good. It is such a good series. I mean, people are talking about it. People are discovering it now, which is the nice thing about streaming is you can go back and watch it.
Right. I suppose I'll have to check it out at some point.
Yeah. It's very much like Lost in that vein. It just feels a lot like Lost. And when you watch it, you'll know why. It's fascinating that Ben Stiller is behind it. Like he's the producer and director. He's not in it. He's a producer and director. So fascinating to see. And yeah, I'll be curious to see what you think of it, because I want to talk about it with you once you've watched it, because, yeah, it was good.
I'll put it on my list.
Yes. That and Night Monkey. Moon Knight.
We've been both watching Moon Knight, but not together, like separately, because we're just kind of out of sync.
Probably because it's Wednesdays and I'm recording Secrets Attack and all kinds of other stuff's going on.
Yeah. So. I feel like it's another one where I'm intrigued, but I don't know where it's going, and I'm not 100% sold yet, but I'm willing to wait and see where it's going.
And Oscar Isaac is well worth watching.
Oscar Isaac is definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, he's 90% of the reason why you watch it.
Right. For sure. Yeah, there's an intriguing mystery there too, and who knows what's going on.
Yep. So
I'm trying to think if I watched anything else this week. I feel like I did. I've been listening. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts this last week. Both the one that goes along with my read of The Power and the Glory. And also I started listening to the audiobook of Piranesi, which was one of my favorite books of last year. I had bought the Kindle version, and so the audiobook was cheap, and I was looking for something to listen to while I was working, and it was even better the second time. And then I was wanting somebody to talk about it with, and I didn't really know anyone to talk about it with me. So I went and found a podcast that, oh, I didn't even remember how I found the podcast. Somebody must have recommended it or mentioned it or something. I have no idea anymore. And that was fun. I really like the narrator on it. If you haven't yet read Piranesi, the audiobook is a really, really good one. And it's such a good, there's a great mystery to it. And it's just beautiful. It's peaceful. It's perfect. So I listened to a bunch of episodes on that too, on all the podcasts all this week.
Hmm. So I finished a book this week.
Yeah.
I finished Sierra 6, which is part of the Gray Man series by Mark Greene. And I mentioned before, and it was good. It was it took place in the past and in the present, sort of a flashback sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the past events and the present events were connected. And that can go badly, but he did a real good job. And I never felt like I was getting lost. Neither thread spent so much time that I forgot what was going on in the other thread when you go back to it.
You mean you didn't have a Lord of the Rings thing where you're like, what happened to Frodo and Sam for half the book?
Yes.
I love Tolkien. I love Lord of the Rings. But the first time I read that, I was just like, but let's get back to the other half of the. Yeah, I would have divided that book differently.
Yes.
If
well,
it was mine
today. That would have been divided differently by most editors. Yeah, what was it? Sterling did the same thing with his Change series. A couple of those books where you were following different groups and you would leave one group and be gone for so long. Then you came back to the other group. You're like, wait, what was going on? And I have to page back to where it was and figure out where they left off because it wasn't enough context for me to remember what was going on.
But Tolkien didn't do that. Like, it was pretty easy to pick back
right
up.
Well, that's why he did it that way. Because he didn't want you to have to like jump back and forth the whole while. He's like, this is a complete section, a complete story, you know, ends here. And then, you know, this part ends here and we go back to this. And now we've picked up from there. Like there wasn't a jumping back and forth. And I think the jumping back and forth can be problematic.
Right.
So this book did a good job of it. And one of the reasons, like I recommend, I mean, it's, if you like spy novels, if you like Tom Clancy type novels, This is a really good series, and in fact, I mentioned Tom Clancy because Mark Greene was Tom Clancy's research assistant and shadow author, co-author for a long time before he died, and then wrote some Jack Ryan books after Tom Clancy died, and then struck out on his own. And there's going to be a movie coming this year on Netflix based on the books, starring Ryan Gosling. I remember his name this time.
Oh, yeah.
And Chris Evans and a bunch of people. In fact, I think it's the biggest budget movie that has ever been made on Netflix so far, which is a big deal because they've had some pretty big budget movies.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, which reminds me, something I watched on Netflix this week was The Adam Project. I'm going to write that down. Starring Ryan Reynolds. And it was okay. And Mark Ruffalo was on it. Was in it too. It was okay. Mm-hmm. Zoe Saldana was in it too. And I'm remembering all the people who were in it. So it was a pretty good cast. It's a time travel-ish movie.
Uh huh.
And it actually made me think of like one of those things like, oh, the problems of time travel. And you talk about like if time travel existed, then we would constantly, you know, tripping over time travelers, right?
Right.
Except the movie didn't exactly say this, but sort of left this out there, which is if time travel existed, the people from the future, it would so much screw up the world that the people of the future would go back in time to prevent the discovery of time travel.
Okay. So we've just created a paradox loop sort
right
of thing.
Right. And in fact, that's kind of what they do in what's going on in this is we have to stop time travel from being invented. So so Ryan Reynolds goes back in time to 2022 from 2050 and meets his 12-year-old self.
Okay.
Now, the kid who plays his 12-year-old self is pretty good because he sounds like a 12-year-old Ryan Reynolds, like wisecracker, got the kind of attitude, the whole thing. So that was pretty good. The other thing I like about the movie was that it conveys the importance of fathers in your life, like your father in your life, and in helping you, even if your father ends up being absent at some point in your life, the lessons he imparts, or at least the love he imparts, stays with you and can influence you in the future. So I thought that was really good. It's worthwhile. It's on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, watch it. It doesn't cost you anything to watch it. It was an entertaining couple hours.
Okay.
Yeah. So what was else? Oh, then we watched today in our Marvel Universe family watch, we watched Ant-Man and the Wasp, which was one that only I had seen. You had not watched it.
I did not watch it.
In your original Marvel watch through. So what'd you think?
I mean, it's still not my favorite bit of the Marvel universe.
The Ant-Man movies.
The Ant-Man movies.
Yeah.
It was fun. I don't...
It was funny.
It was very funny.
The kids laughed a lot.
It was laugh out loud funny at many points.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And you understand why I told you it needed to be watched at this point in between the two Endgame and Infinity War.
I mean, I knew that while watching Endgame because it's referenced there. I just was like, okay, but it's a scene. I figured out what happened and I went on with my life. Like,
but for the sake of the kids, they needed to have this movie. I'm not sure they would have picked up as well as you did.
I suppose.
You're a savvy movie watcher. In any case. I like it. It's a fun sort of romp.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a terribly serious movie, and while it ties in a way, it's not like you can't possibly understand what's going on unless you've watched it.
Right. No, that's true.
And I felt like it also left a few, like, there's definitely room for a sequel. It left some questions that have not yet been answered in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
Open. I mean, it's fun. I really like Evangeline Lilly. I thought that she got more time or more development in this one than she did in the past one. I liked, also, her hairstyle wasn't that really annoying, really blunt,
very banged, serious boss woman. What was that? Like, I love the self-referential nature of some of the stuff in the movie. Like, oh, she's got that serious hairdo that makes her like a boss woman.
Yeah, she was much more softer, much more like, I felt she was much more like her character in Lost, much more like Kate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was glad that Luis got more screen time because is so funny.
Luis's truth serum scene. So funny.
That was hilarious.
All the kids were laughing so much. That was so good.
Yeah. And, yeah. There was a nice sort of reference, some nice references to the Segovia Accords and continuing fallout from Civil War, which is nice. I like the way that, again, Marvel
connects everything.
Not just connects it, it's that things have consequences.
Right.
You can't just go, like, tear things up and not have to deal with the cleanup. The
literal cleanup.
The fallout.
Yeah.
And that's something I appreciate, like, that we see what happens after these big battles and how outraged everybody is, understandably so, when these superheroes come and they tear up things.
Right. Like he does in this at points.
Right. So, yeah, it continues to be good.
Good. Yeah, I like Ant-Man and the Wasp. I like the humor and there was a little bit of, I don't know, some of the story itself felt a little incoherent. The villain was not the best villain. I mean, she was sympathetic, but I don't know, I don't know, there was something wrong with the villain.
I felt like they didn't really give her enough character arc, enough motivation, there was something.
She was just mad in pain, driven mad with pain.
Yeah, she was less a villain and more an antagonist.
Right.
Actually, I think that might be the problem with the movie is that there's...
The antagonist is not really the villain.
There is, I mean, there is kind of the villain guy, but he's given even less development time. Like the
yeah, and he's kind of a bumbling comic villain.
Yeah, it feels like there's a little bit of a incoherence in there are a few plot holes too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, it doesn't bear looking at too closely. I love that first scene though, where not the very first scene, the scene where Scott Lang is with his daughter in the house, and they've created the tunnel system.
Yes, and he's playing this really great imaginative play with his daughter, and I like the fact that his relationship with his ex-wife has healed to the point where they're hugging each other now, and he's hugging her new husband, and there's a friendliness, and I appreciated that.
Yeah, I know some people are disturbed by the fact that, you know, being okay with divorce. I'm like, at some point, you have to, it is what it is. The life is what it is. And, you know, while this is not the way things should be, though, it is the way things are. And you have to end up having to live with what
the ability
happened.
to take the brokenness of the world and to put hard feelings to rest, to find a measure of reconciliation and to move on with your life. I mean, yes, in an ideal world, they wouldn't have been divorced, but this is what it is.
Right.
And I like the fact that he is such a good dad, that he and his daughter have these great in jokes, like where she gives him the trophy of world's greatest grandmother.
Right. And at the end, when she's counseling to go and save the world, save the girl and be the hero. And, you know, he's like, do you think I really can pull it off? She's like, of course you can. You are the world's greatest grandma.
which was reminiscent of the really ugly, hideous bunny that he gave her in the first movie, which right. You think, oh my gosh, he is the worst dad ever. And then she shrieks and she says, I love it. It's the best.
Like, do I know my daughter or do I know my daughter?
Yeah. I mean, their relationship, his relationship with his daughter is one of my favorite father-daughter relationships. I really do like that.
Which is what makes Infinity War all the more, I mean, Endgame all the more poignant. That moment. In Endgame, without spoiling anything, I just. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember.
When?
I don't. Did
okay, well.
You don't have to spoil it for me.
Okay.
I will.
Well, you've watched the movie, so.
I will enjoy watching it again without remembering it.
Okay. In any case, yes. Is it really a spoiler if you've forgotten and you.
Yes.
Okay.
If I don't want to be spoiled. And it's a spoiler.
I guess it's a blessing to have a poor memory. All right. So anyway, the Ant-Man and Wasp was good. And so may there be more Ant-Man and Wasp movies, which I think they are in the works.
I feel like there's something else we watched this week.
Well, there's the Sister Carla video we wanted to talk about.
No, there was something else. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, as I was just saying, so Catholic TV had a Lenten mission again. They started this a couple years ago during COVID and lockdown when no one could go out to church. They had this week where Cardinal Sean gave talks every night. It was awesome. It was really good.
It was really good.
And they did it again last year, except it wasn't just Cardinal Sean. They had other people as well. And Cardinal Sean did it last night.
Huh? I don't remember it from last year.
Yeah, they did do it. I don't know that it was anybody we would recall or especially, but they did do it.
Did we watch it?
I don't think we did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think it was just like the week came and went and we're like, oh, we missed all of it. Like we did practically this year. It's always at like 7, which is really hard.
Yeah, it's not a good time.
It's like dinner. We're in the middle of dinner. So, and we got two nights of scouts these days. So, but this one was had our friend, Sister Carla Gonsalves, who I used to work with at the Archdiocese, who entered into the cloister of the Trappistine Monastery. Here in Massachusetts, our Lady Mount Carmel that we always talk about.
No.
Not Our Lady Mount Carmel. Mount St. Mary's.
Mount St. Mary's Benedictine
As soon as it
Monastery.
Came out of my mouth, I knew it
not
was wrong.
Not a Carmelite.
Not a Carmelite.
So she gave a talk. I guess they were all, the speakers were invited to talk about the call.
Right.
And Sister Carla said she was really like, how do I talk about something so personal as, like, my call?
Well, let me tell you something a little bit about Sister Carla. She's not one of these ethereal, like, very, like, there are some sisters who you look at them and they're like, they're so like an angel in the clouds. Carla is very down to earth. She's very like for a cloistered nun. She's just real. Like she hasn't changed really in the way she talks and like the way she holds herself and how she talks, which I think is great. But you were saying, I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. So she was talking about how, the answer to like what to talk about came into her in prayer, and she was reflecting on the passage in First Samuel, God calling Samuel, and you know where he's asleep in the temple, and he hears and he thinks it's Eli calling him, and no, it's actually God calling him. But she said, you know, her experience of her vocation, the best word to describe it was chaos. And I loved that. Like, you do not often hear the religious vocation being talked about in terms of chaotic disruption. And yet, this is often how we experience God. Like, she said, it divided into three periods of chaos. The chaos before her call, the chaos while she was discerning the call, and the chaos after the call.
Oh, I certainly can vouch for the chaos while she was discerning the call. I was witness to some of that.
And you know, she talked about how like she just did not ever intend to have a religious vocation. And then when she was invited to a retreat weekend with the Benedictines, she's like, okay, that'll be great. That'll be fun. It'll be educational. I'll learn something. Of course, I don't have a vocation to them, but it'll be a good weekend. And then she tried to discern with other religious. She determined from the weekend that, yes, she was indeed actually perhaps being called to religious life. But of course, she was convinced it was not with the Benedictines. And she went and tried a lot of different active orders because I can't possibly be a contemplative. I'm much too active. She's the kind of person who was, you know, organizing festivals and like loud praise and worship music, and like quiet contemplative cloister life was just not her bag at all. And yet she was restless until she finally gave in and said, okay, this is evidently what God wants me to do. I'm not going to be happy unless I say yes and do it. But I love the fact that she's so very down to earth and real about who she is and how Jesus works with that in her life. You know, that this is really where she's happy, but it's not at all what she would have planned for herself.
Right.
It was a really beautiful vocation, a kind of a vocation talk, but also just sort of, you know, I kept thinking this sounds like a vocation talk, but why is it part of a Lenten retreat? And I think that it really is about how do we hear God's voice in our lives? Like, how do we listen to that especially when it's saying something that we aren't expecting?
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it a lot.
Well, I mean, the call came at, you know, the institution of the priesthood is Holy Thursday. So I think that's really appropriate.
Yeah, I watched it with Lucy the other night. I had already watched it once, and then I put it on while I was doing her hair, and she said she really liked it a lot.
So if you want to watch it, it's only 18, 19 minutes long. You can go to their Catholic TV's YouTube channel, youtube.com/Catholic TV Network, and you'll see it there at the just page down. You'll see the Lenten Mission ones, and there's five of them in all. Father Brian O'Hanlon, Father Michael Rora, Sister Julie Benedicta Turner of the Daughters of St. Paul, and Sister Carla of the Trappistines, and then Cardinal Sean. So, yeah, check it out. Get to know my friend Carla. She's really awesome.
She has the 1,000-watt smile, too.
Yes.
All the time.
Yes.
She is, like, one of the most, I don't know, I just watching her smile makes me smile in response and makes me feel just happy.
She's one of the most joyful people you'll meet. Yeah. Yeah. It's really nice. So,
I'm glad they managed to pull it out of the cloister for the talk.
It's kind of wild that they did. So let's talk about Palm Sunday.
Yes.
We had our Palm Sunday celebration. despite two kids being sick and staying home, they watched the Mass on TV. I think they watched it from, it was either the Notre Dame Mass or the National Shrine Mass. I can't tell which one. They said it was the Cathedral Mass. But I'm thinking it was probably the Notre Dame Mass.
Probably.
Because they
said it was the one that was shorter.
The chapel at Notre Dame looks a little bit like the cathedral in Boston. I mean, it's smaller, obviously, but it's similar. So I'm guessing that's where it is. In any case, we got to go to Mass at our parish, and we got to have our pastor again, Father Matt, which was nice. And he said something at the beginning of the homily, which is that the church provides the priest or deacon must give a homily at every Mass of some sort, except the only Mass where it's optional is Palm Sunday, which is interesting. I'm not sure why that is.
Well, Father Matt said because we have such a very long gospel, and it wasn't like, well, you've endured this, and therefore, but that the gospel itself
is itself
the passion narrative itself is enough, like enough for us to have the, you know, to think about, to meditate on. It doesn't need embroidery.
It's sufficient unto itself.
Which I really liked. I've never heard a priest say something along those lines before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard them, the sort of the joking, well, that was a long enough gospel, therefore I'm not going to like make you sit through a homily too. Whereas this was much more about like, I can't possibly say anything more, like it is enough. Mm-hmm. But he did say, instead, he spent the homily time exhorting us to make the most of Holy Week.
Don't waste the opportunity of Holy Week.
And he said, you know, even if like your Lent thus far has not, you know, you haven't really done a good job of praying and fasting, you've kind of let it all slide. This is the opportunity. It's not too late.
Start again.
To restart.
Yeah.
Press the restart button. And I really like that. He listed a whole bunch of local opportunities. Like, what can we do at our parish this week in order to enter into Holy Week?
Go to daily Mass. Come to the showing of the Passion of the Christ at the rectory on Sunday. Say a rosary every day on your way to work. Come to the cathedral for the Chrism Mass on Tuesday. Like all these different ways you could observe.
It really felt like I really liked the fact that it was an invitation, and it felt very personal to me. It felt like I personally, who do not feel like I've done a really good job with Lent this year, I felt like it was. Yeah, that invitation to, all right, now it's time. Like you can do it. Home stretch. You can add something more. You can do a little bit more. Be a little bit more.
And, right.
That was exactly what I needed to hear. It also reminded me very much of one of my absolute favorite readings from the Office of Readings, from the Liturgy of the Hours, of the whole year, which is St. John Chrysostom's Easter homily. In which he very specifically says, those who have kept the fast and those who have not kept the fast. And he uses imagery from the gospel about the laborers who are paid the same, those who start at the very early morning and those who come at noon and those who come late in the day and those who only work an hour, and they're all paid the same wage. St. John Chrysostom sort of uses that to talk about like us approaching the Easter feast. And saying that even if we haven't, if we haven't kept a great Lent, if we've, you know, missed out on all the opportunities, we're still invited to the feast. We're still invited to come and celebrate because we don't earn Easter through.
Right. Lent isn't an opportunity to earn a good Easter. I got a good Lent, so I'm earning a good Easter. No. A good Easter is for everyone, regardless of how you spent your Lent.
And so I love meditating on that, and I love the invitation to just enter into it as much as you can. St. John Chrysostom says, let those who have borne the burden of Lent now receive their pay, and those who've toiled since the first hour, let them now receive their due reward. Let any who came after the third hour be grateful to join in the feast, and those who may have come after the sixth, let them not be afraid of being too late. For the Lord is gracious, and he receives the last, even as the first. He gives rest to him who comes on the 11th hour, as well as to him who's toiled since the first. Yes, he has pity on the last and he serves the first. He rewards the one and praises the effort. Come, you all, enter into the joy of your Lord. You the first and you the last receive alike your reward. You rich and you poor, dance together. You sober and you weaklings, celebrate the day. You who have kept the fast and you who have not, rejoice today. The table is richly loaded. Enjoy its royal banquet. The calf is a fatted one. Let no one go away hungry. All of you enjoy the banquet of faith. All of you receive the riches of his goodness. Let no one grieve over his poverty, for the universal kingdom has been revealed. Let no one weep over his sins, for pardon has shone from the grave. Let no one fear death, for the death of our Savior has set us free. I think that's a really great word. It's an Easter homily, but it's also a great word to go into Holy Week with, anticipating that joyful feast that we will be able to partake of no matter what we do.
And I think the same goes for whether you were baptized 50 years ago as a baby or you were baptized last year at the Easter Vigil. You know, it is you have an equal opportunity to celebrate. It is your feast regardless of this, in the same amount, in the same measure. You know, it's, you know, there is no division whether you're the Pope or the beggar in the street. The feast is open to us all equally. You know, we're all welcome to the feast. And that is a good homily, a really good reminder of the celebration that Easter is supposed to be. I mean, it is, we're called to celebrate. I mean, I remember at Steubenville, we'd go to the Easter Vigil, which was like 10 hours long. And then like at 2 o'clock in the morning after it got out, or 1:30 in the morning, we'd have resurrection parties because you're a college student and you can do such things.
And you know, I can't even imagine staying up that late nowadays.
Partying till dawn and then going to the morning mass. You know, I mean, that's what we're supposed to go crazy with, like, just joy, because Easter is that big a deal.
But it's easy to, I think, get sucked into feeling defeated, like, because...
Oh, I was such a terrible Catholic this Lent. I didn't give up anything, or I gave up things and I kept breaking my promise and I
kept forgetting about it. I ate meat every single Friday because I just couldn't remember. Like, I've had those Lents.
I didn't pray anything extra. I didn't do anything extra. I just kind of bumped along on my bottom all the way to Holy Week. That's okay. It's okay. That's what Jesus says. He turns to you, looks at you and says, it's okay. Here. Take my hand, come sit at the table. We're going to have a feast.
It's enough. You don't have to. I mean, he invited the good thief hanging on the cross, who repented at the very last possible second, to the feast in heaven today.
He got a seat at the table. Not the last seat either. He got a good seat at the table. And that's what we'll all get, is a good seat at the table. So don't worry about it. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's a good way to end as we go into Holy Week, because I hope that's it's a good reminder for you as well. So as we finish up, I would like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Richard S., Tony A., Marty K., Zane C., and Joshua S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. You'll find links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. You can send us your feedback at the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to bets, B-E-T-T-S, at sqpn.com, or visit the new StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord, where Angela said she, after a couple years, finally got the pun about our name, Raising the Bets. It's a great community, and we're having lots of fun there. We just started a book channel, by the way, a book talk channel.
Oh.
So people are talking books. Will that draw you in now?
Possibly. I am a sucker for book talk.
That's right. Anyway, until next time, I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.